Wait, you're not used to having pictures in your notes. Look at there. It begins and ends with a picture. Look at that. All right, real quick, if we can, just to introduce chapter 13, just a few minutes that we have. As we begin this new section, I think Luke is deliberately doing these, at least these three things. He's shifting the focus location-wise. He's going to shift the focus from Jerusalem to Antioch of Syria. And that's going to perhaps frustrate some of those down in Jerusalem, but they'll get over it eventually. But Jerusalem is still an authority to some extent, but they're not the grand poobah that some of them would like to think. And so he's going to shift up to Antioch of Syria. And when the apostles come back from their various church planting trips, they're going to come back to Antioch, not Jerusalem. So, and that's huge. That's a significant change. And so there is much to be said for us to be careful making Jerusalem the example of churches today, though they can be and should be to some extent. But it might be better for us to say, what did Antioch do? Okay, what was the example of the church in Antioch? And there is much to be said there. Secondly, the shift from Peter to Paul, right? You're shifting, and Peter is only going to be mentioned a couple times from chapter 13 through the end. In fact, he disappears, I think, by chapter 15. But again, I do think that Peter is the foundation on which Jesus builds his church, and not just his profession of faith, but Peter himself. And then as that foundation has been laid, and then he shifts over to Paul. Thirdly, he's going to shift not just the location and not just the primary messenger, he's going to shift the primary audience from a primarily Jewish audience to a primarily Gentile audience. And you're going to, and the shift here is also going to be in relationship to languages and the different dialects that are found throughout what we call Turkey, the country of Turkey today. Secondly, you need to notice that Luke is going to begin to accompany Paul on his travels. So just be alert to this when you see the expression "we" in the book of Acts. Okay, who's the we? Kemosabe, right? It's Luke is involved, and that's very significant, and I've given you the references there. And then Luke is also going to give us five progress reports in this section. So continuing his habit of the earlier section. So you can see there with your handy dandy map on the first church planting trip, you can see that Antioch of Syria is on the about just a little over halfway up on the right hand side. And they're going to travel across the green Mediterranean. It's just obviously for sake of the map here, but they're going to go to the island of Cyprus. Where was Barnabas from? Okay, they're going to Barnabas's home country, okay, to his home island. And they're going to spend time there. They're going to hit two primary cities. We'll talk about that as time comes, and then they're going to go up into, again, the central part of modern Turkey, into the area of Pamphylia, and they're going to go up, and it's a rugged area, it's a difficult area even to this day, but he's going to go up, or they're going to go up. John Mark, obviously, is going to cut out, which becomes a matter of consternation later, right? Chapter 15. We'll talk about that. I got almost a whole page on who was right, so to speak, in that issue. And I think the answer is Paul, I think it's pretty clear. We'll talk about it in the time to come. But they go up and they interact with all these different people. They end up over Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe, and all of the weird experiences that they have. It's a superstitious people. It's a people who have. There is some Jewish influence up there. There are some synagogues, but it is by and large a really pagan area. And Paul is going to communicate the gospel there, to the extent that when is it chapter 14 where Paul and Barnabas are mistaken for gods, that Barnabas is recognized as the leader of the ministry team, right? He's considered to be Zeus, and Paul is regarded as Hermes, who is the messenger of the gods. And they have to say, no, that is not us, and how they respond to that. 3 minutes. I think we can do this. Let's go to the next page. Look at that, a whole page in plus in on one day. Chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. And I think we can do this real quickly. The multi-ethnic leadership team of the congregation in chapter 13. Now there were at Antioch. Now, Luke assumes that you know which Antioch he's talking about, because there's going to be two Antiochs in chapter 13 and following, and if you aren't careful, you're going to get mixed up. So he's referencing Antioch of Syria. So there were at Antioch in the church that was there prophets and teachers, and he gives us two groups, and these are identified in the Greek language with this little word, the letter T or tau, T and E, tet. And so the first group is Barnabas, Simeon, and Lucius. We already have heard of Barnabas, who is a Levite. He is perceived as the leader. There is secondly Simeon, which is, again, we struggle with this, and so we repronounce or mispronounce the word that's used here. We usually pronounce it Niger, which is not the way it's pronounced, because we're afraid of saying the word nigger, right, which is a horrible misuse of this word. It simply refers to black. Okay, it's not necessarily, it's not derogatory. It was never originally derogatory. In fact, if you buy ink for your printer, what is printed on the side of the box or the container? It will say N-I-G-R. Okay, that's not derogatory. It's just simply a recognition. It's black, right? But Simeon is of dark complexion, and then Lucius, who is from North Africa, west of Egypt. The second group, and this is interesting, of these five, we have Manaen, who had some sort of connections with Herod Antipas, who was the youngest son of Herod the Great. If he was indeed, as it says here, who had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch meaning the one of four rulers, if it means he was raised he was roughly the same age as, that would mean that Manaen is roughly 65 to 70 years of age. Okay, so these are not all young bucks who are running the church here. Paul is probably, or Saul of Tarsus is probably at this time frame in his late 30s, right, pushing the 40s about this time. Okay, so these are what we would perceive as middle-aged men. They are prophets and teachers linked together, and I've given you some other references there in 1 Corinthians, Romans, and Ephesians. These men are actively serving. This is important. They are actively serving when the Spirit, what does it say there in verse 2? And while they were ministering to the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, "Set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I have called them." So the Spirit does not call lazy individuals. right? The Spirit is calling men who are already engaged in ministry. Okay. Now, they're engaged in the church there at Antioch. God probably communicates by the Spirit through the prophets at this time. Paul is set apart. He is sanctified at least three times in his life, right? He is set apart at birth or before birth. He is set apart at salvation, and here he is set apart for specific service. So when somebody says, have you been sanctified? Right? Paul could say, a few times, right? And they would say, whoa, right? And Paul would say, no, no, no. It's God's grace. So they did three things before they went on the trip. You see that? They fasted. And when they had fasted, secondly, they had prayed. And thirdly, they laid hands on them. So there's identification with them. And I think it's helpful to note that there was swift obedience. And they come back and give a report to the congregation. And I think thirdly, it's important to recognize that the Spirit is working through the congregation, not apart from it. We live in a day where there are many who would say this, you don't need the church, as long as you have the Spirit, you're good. And that's not how the Spirit works, at least not the Holy Spirit. All right, and then lastly, very quickly, the paragraph emphasizes a twofold responsibility. First of all, opportunities for service rarely come to the idle. Occasionally, but rarely. Secondly, opportunities for service are rarely made known to only the individual. How many times have you heard that? But God called me. Like, well, maybe not. Right? If nobody else is recognizing that, it's a good indication that it's probably not from God. Thirdly, opportunities for service often include sending the church's best. Well, what are we going to do without Paul and Barnabas? You'll survive. Right? Don't hang on to what you perceive to be the best. The church will survive and, in fact, thrive. And we'll see that in the chapters ahead. And lastly, opportunities for service often push us out of our comfort zone. Paul and Barnabas have gotten comfortable in Antioch, right? And it's been good. There's nothing wrong with being comfortable. At the same time, don't hold on to your comfort as the only or as the most important thing. There's times when you need to set aside that and move on. So we'll see how that transpires beginning in verse 4 in next week. So Paul is going to travel roughly 1,300 to 1,400 miles. It will take at least 1 year to do so. And they're going to come back and explain to the church what God has done. So I'm looking forward to this. I think it'll be really helpful for us to cover several different facets of doctrine that are intertwined here that Luke gives to us. So.